court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Today's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Kind of forgot what we were doing there for a second.
I noticed you a little bit lost.
Lost in space.
I started watching that last night.
Did you really?
Yeah, we watched the first two episodes.
Oh, is it the new remake?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. How is it?
Well, you know, you have to adjust. The characters are different and the storyline is a little different. And, of course, I don't know, I guess what they're saying kind of makes sense, but, you know, it takes a little bit. The whole robot thing is a little different. Of course, Dr. Smith is a female, but, I don't want to give it away, but she's not even really Dr. Smith.
Oh, really?
She's playing the part, but she's not.
Well, they've already had a major plot twist two episodes in?
Yes. Already.
What do you think this Lost in Space thing was some sort of... I guess, cross-marketing scheme with President Trump announcing that he wants to have a space arm.
Space force.
A space force.
Well, it did seem eerily close to the same thing. It said the way things are going, everybody's going to want to leave and go somewhere, so I guess that's as good a place as any, outer space.
Well, today is actually, when we're recording this, is June 20th. It's West Virginia Day.
Happy birthday, West by God, Virginia.
And West Virginia Day is basically the day that West Virginia became a state back on June 20th, 1863, once we became Best Virginia.
That's right, Best Virginia. That's just like all those things that Maxwell Edison keeps posting about, another reason why we left. Actually, we just got a better deal. That was why we left.
Pretty much. Well, one of the things that took place today, which was kind of a very strange turn of circumstance, is that the U.S. District Attorney Mike Stewart, he's the local... federal prosecutor here.
I've debated him before.
You have?
Yes.
Where?
Back in 2006 when I was running for office. He was also running for office. And I declined money from Don Blankenship when he was supporting all the Republicans that were running. And I declined money from him because I didn't think he was a very virtuous character.
Yes.
So I sent his $1,000 back to him and said I didn't want it. And then the paper saw that when we had to disclose our donations and everything. I had to disclose that I got it, but that I returned it. So they picked up on that and did a story about it. So then they were debating, should these guys be taking money from Don Blankenship? So I was against it, and he was for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I saw then that Don Blankenship was a crook. I'd had dealings with him working for the railroad and him working for the coal company.
Yeah.
And I knew what kind of person he was. And if he was the face of the Republican Party, which they made him in 2006... I didn't want nothing to do with it.
Well, I think Mike Stewart's going to be running for something here before too long, because he's I saw him speak at a Chamber of Commerce dinner, and he was very political about it.
Yeah,
so.
He's using this as his springboard. I'd say that you'll see his name running for governor here in the not-too-distant future.
It's funny. I heard that same rumor today.
Yep.
But anyway, he used West Virginia Day to talk about what a sad day for West Virginia it was, because he revealed a federal indictment against West Virginia Supreme Court Justice Alan Loffrey, a 22-count indictment. And there's been some investigations going on. It's been rumored there was a federal investigation, but nobody really knew for sure.
And he's our Chief Justice?
He was our Chief Justice.
He was our Chief Justice. He was head of the whole West Virginia Supreme Court.
He was. He's been suspended since, I think, June 8th, because the Judicial Ethics Committee suspended him. Actually, if you go to the West Virginia Supreme Court website and look at the biographies of the different justices, there's like a little asterisk by his which says that he is not allowed to participate, and he's been suspended without pay for now. So
at least it's without pay, huh?
I think so, yeah. I'm pretty sure it's without pay.
Should be without pay.
But the counts, there are 22 charges, 16 counts of mail fraud, 2 counts of wire fraud, and 1 count of witness tampering, 3 counts of making false statements to federal justices.
Well, the people that do that kind of stuff are supposed to appear in front of him. He's not supposed to be behind him.
That's true.
Or whatever. Something.
Yeah. So I figured we would probably talk about that today because it was kind of an interesting topic. And Christopher Steer actually posted on Facebook today, what about an episode on how judges can be disbarred? So seemed like kind of a timely topic, maybe.
Well, I would think so. We kind of went through some circumstances where judges got themselves in trouble that one episode.
We did, but this one's hitting right at home.
Yeah, it's right here in our mother state.
So let's talk about who is Alan Loffrey, the aforementioned former Chief Justice. Well, he was born in 1970 in Tucker County, West Virginia.
He's a young feller.
He is fairly young. He graduated from Tucker County High School in 1988, and he ended up graduating from WVU. I figured there'd be a comment from you about that, Tommy.
I would not give... I mean, that now you can see why he is in the situation he's in. You know how you get a WVU grad off your front porch, right?
Is that paying for the pizza?
Correct.
And he actually got his law degree from Capital University Law School in Columbus, where I did my first year of law school.
Yeah.
And he went on to get some advanced law degrees. He got an SJD, which is a Doctor of Juridical Science from the American University. I don't even know what that is. He was admitted to...
That means he's a real prestigious lawyer.
And that's true. He did an LLM program in criminology and criminal justice at the University of London in 2005. And he has an LLM in Masters in Law and Government from American University, Washington College of Law. So, I mean, he has
some credentials.
Yeah.
He just has no morals.
That remains to be seen. With all people, they're innocent until proven guilty. So,
right.
So
unless it's a civil forfeiture.
That's right.
Then you're guilty until proven innocent.
So Loffrey began working as a law clerk at the Supreme Court of Appeals back in 2003. He had worked with the Attorney General's office a little bit before that. And then here's where this story gets a little weird. In 2006, he wrote a book, and it was entitled "Don't Buy Another Vote, I Won't Pay for a Landslide," and it was published, and it was basically a nonpartisan look at West Virginia's history of political corruption in the state, and had forewords which were written by Senator John McCain and Robert Byrd. So he wrote this book about political corruption in the state.
Well, he is correct. There was plenty to choose from. As we've mentioned many times, that's how they figured out that Elvis was actually dead when they found him on the Logan County voter registration.
West Virginia is notoriously politically corrupt.
Yes. If you don't believe it, that's where the short pints came in.
Yep.
They had the short pints they'd give out, or $20.
So he ran for justice in 2012 and was elected to a 12-year term. So a justice gets a 12-year term in West Virginia.
Well, that's too long.
I'm kind of for it, assuming the right person wins the job.
Well, that'd be true, but...
Because then they don't have to worry about re-election. They can focus on just being a justice.
But people being people and all, it just leads to bad things. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
And that's what happens with a lot of these guys. They get this absolute power. They think they have absolute power and that they're untouchable. They can do whatever they want. And so they pretty much do whatever they want.
Well, I think it's also a sense of entitlement once they get to that position, too. They feel like they're entitled to these different things.
He had all these fancy-wancy credentials that he got from all these places, and he just figured that he was a top dog. He was better than everybody else. Remember that one episode there a while back? You mentioned the desk that was involved in it.
The Cass Gilbert desk, yeah.
Yeah, that's an antique and worth a whole lot of money. And that desk, he decides he's using it at the office, it may as well go to his house.
Yeah, that actually came out in the indictments.
Yeah, so it should have.
It's weird, though, because the way it came out is not just for simply taking it. It was basically more about the way he answered questions about taking it.
Yeah.
So one interesting thing about he has a son. His name is Justice. He called his son Justice. So I thought that was interesting.
Wait, you know, if you remember, there were several of them back in when we talked about Supreme Court, or we talked about... Supreme Court justices or something like that. There were several of them. They had that name.
Yeah.
So, if you're breeding, if you're involved in it, because obviously this was his goal, was to be on there. Looking at the credentials that he acquired, then he went and was a law clerk for the Supreme Court. This was obviously his goal. So obviously he's setting the sights for his son.
Probably so. where this story really starts, we have to go back to the beginning of January of 2017. And
Are we getting in the Wayback Machine, Peabody?
This is not really way back. There's just a little ways back.
Just a little ways.
There was.
I couldn't even walk that far.
Maybe so. I don't know. Your knees aren't holding up too well right now.
After August 10th, I'll be walking anywhere.
That's right. You're having your knee surgery.
Yeah.
So there was a Supreme Court administrator named Steve Canterbury, and he had been there for about 12 years. I guess he came there probably based on looking at the timeline after Loffrey was there as a clerk, but before he was the actual justice. And by all accounts, in January of 2017, he was basically just, there's a word I wanted to say, but it's not exactly G-rated, so I won't say it. But he was poop-canned rather abruptly and asked to leave his office quickly, didn't really get much time to pack up his belongings or things like that. And he had been there for quite some time. And now, that was kind of a startling thing that happened. It was kind of big news in the legal field because everyone's like, whoa, they fired the Supreme Court administrator.
He was unceremoniously removed.
That's right. Now, not much else really happened about the story until about, I guess it was late summer, fall of 2017. And then little bits of information started kind of trickling out here and there about different practices that went on at the Supreme Court. So I think it's pretty safe to say that all this kind of came from Canterbury. There were some stories too that he, as he's leaving the building, said that, you know, basically I'll get you, or, you know, things along those lines. There were some threats that he basically knew where the bodies were buried, and it was not a good idea to treat him the way they did.
Hell so, hath no fury like an administrative clerk scorned.
Exactly. One of the things too is that attorneys, basically, what came out was that there was a lot of kind of bad spending practices at the Supreme Court, that they were very wasteful with things.
Well, but in the way the structure is set up, there was no treasurer or anybody that to account for it. The justices themselves decided how the money was spent.
That's right. They set their own budget basically and did whatever they want with it. So there was really no oversight, which is kind of a rarity in most states don't do that.
Right. In any kind of government, there's nothing that just allows people to do carte blanche and then you don't come along and have some type of end of the year review or audit or something. But these guys, here's your money, here's your budget. And they would apply for a bigger budget sometimes if they thought they needed it for whatever reason. They didn't have to account for where the money was going.
Now, the reason that this really struck a nerve with a lot of attorneys was because about that same time that these stories were coming out about wasteful spending, they were severely cutting back on the ability for the lower courts to appoint guardian ad litem for children. So they basically limited it, the situations in which you could do it, because normally the family courts would appoint a guardian ad litem for a child if there was any kind of dispute going on between the parents where they really needed somebody to step in and see what was the best interest for the child and kind of advocate for the child. Mm-hmm. Well, they said basically, we don't have enough money for this, so we're going to cut back on that program. So, and they didn't really pay large fees for that. So it was kind of like, you're spending all this money on this other stuff, but you can't help out the kids here and do this.
Right.
So then in November of 2017, there's a local reporter here in Huntington. Well, I guess he's in Charleston, maybe. His name is Kenny Bass. He used to be a sports reporter back a long time ago.
I know old Kenny.
Yep. And he broke a story, and that detailed the amount of the spending that was going on and basically what the justices were doing when they were remodeling their chambers. And I'm going to talk about some of the numbers here because they're actually shocking, the amount of spending that went on.
Not when you remember absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's the root of all evil.
So the story you wrote, I like the way it starts out, so I'm going to quote from it directly. It says, the West Virginia Supreme Court is a secretive place. In fact, this is the first time anyone here can remember that TV cameras were allowed into the inner sanctum, the private offices of the five justices. So it kind of sets the tone there. And it says that basically, since 2009, there's been a lot of renovations going on there, which everyone knew there were renovations going on at Supreme Court. It's an old building and it needs to be updated. The original estimates for the upgrades were about $900,000, but basically it's ballooned to $3.7 million. So that's quite an increase. So they kind of broke down where these expenditures were coming from. And the most egregious one was Chief Justice Alan Loffrey's chambers.
Well, he was the head guy. He had to have the biggest bench or whatever.
The biggest bench. Well, they're all on the same bench up there.
Well, I think he got his own bench. I think he had his initials carved in it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he was sitting. His little seat had gold on it or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So he took office in 2013, like I said, and he started remodeling his office pretty soon thereafter. and the total cost for the work was $363,000 to remodel his office.
Man.
That's more than most people's houses.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, especially in West Virginia.
Especially in West Virginia. Now, some of the major expenditures, and this is the one that is just shocking, there was a sectional sofa that had a price tag of $32,000.
A what sofa?
A sectional sofa.
I thought you said a sexual sofa. I thought, what kind of sofa is that?
Well, if it was a sexual sofa, $32,000 might be a bargain.
Well, I know, but that's what I wanted to see. What kind of gizmos are we getting with that? Are there inflatable parts or something?
This was just a sectional sofa, and it was $32,000, and it had up to $1,700 in throw pillows on it.
Well, you better get a lot of throwing out of those.
And so that was the most eye-popping one, and it's pretty funny because there's actually a Twitter account, which is at Loughry Couch, LOUGHRYCOUCH, and it is essentially somebody is pretending to be Justice Loughry's couch, and so it tweets like it was it's some sort of autonomous being. It's pretty funny.
Well, why would you need a sectional couch in your office to start with?
Well, that's a good question, and Kenny Bask asked Justice Loughry during an interview. He said, "Why is there a couch that costs more than $30,000 in your chambers?" And he said, "Kenny, it's absolutely outrageous that the prior administrative director would spend that much money on a couch with state money. I think it's outrageous, and I think it's shameful." So basically,
he blamed the guy they fired.
He blamed the guy he fired.
So he went and picked out this $32,000 couch, and then Justice Loughry was cursed with it. He was stuck with this abysmal couch in his office.
Exactly.
Huh? He had to keep it. He couldn't take it back.
And he said, so that some of the other things that were in there, $16,000 for 8 office chairs, a $2,560 coffee table, $6,409 for window cornices and blinds. I don't even know what a cornice is. And basically,
I know what a Cornishian is.
I do too.
I don't think that's the same thing though.
They're
probably
delicious.
Some kind of decoration on the corners there or something.
I think you're right. But here's the one thing too, is basically a custom made wooden medallion built into the floor with each county cut from a different colored piece of wood in Justice Loughry's home county of Tucker in blue granite. And that flooring cost $7,500. So,
man.
Now, something like that I can imagine seeing in some sort of visitor center or something like that.
Or if it was the entrance to the Supreme Court or something like that.
This is in a private office that no one is ever allowed to go into. And that's basically what's there.
Except for Kenny Bask.
Except for Kenny Bask. He busted down the door. So here's where the story gets goes from just egregious to maybe criminal. Kenny says, "How much input did you have in the renovations and furnishings of your office?" And Loughry said, "Well, very little. When I came into office, the renovations were part of a 6.5-year renovations, first, third, and fourth floors. More than 96% of those renovations were completed by the time I came to my office."
My 4% just cost all of it.
That's right. Basically, Canterbury went on the record and said that Loughry put a lot of effort into it, and that basically he had a lot of oversight and requested pretty much everything that was in there. And Loughry turned around and said, "No, I didn't." He said, "Mr. Canterbury put things together and came and asked for some approval. Maybe, do you like this desk? Do you like this color? Something like that." And I remember saying, his way says, "I remember saying something to the effect, 'Well, if anybody gets upset, I'll just blame it on you. You're the administrator.'" Canterbury said, "I laughed at that, of course. Good joke. But now the joke's on me, I guess." So that's the way Loughry was trying to play it. Like, you know, it wasn't his fault at all.
Yeah, you picked it out.
He says, "So to be clear, you did not select that couch, and you did not mandate the $27,000 in fabric changes for the couch. That's why the couch costs so much, because they basically reupholstered it with $20,000 worth of upholstery."
So he bought a $12,000 couch and reupholstered it for $20,000.
I think that's about the breakdown of it. But he said, "No, it's absolutely outrageous. The answer is no. I did not have any oversight into that. But there is a major problem about that statement.
Yes.
And we'll get into it after this motion's made, I think.
Oh, yes.
You may approach the couch to make motions.
your Supreme Court couchedness. You would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
And pay for couches.
And pay for couches and cornices and molded county floors or something with marble inlays.
So who do we have on the docket today?
We have on the docket Sleep Number.
Now, maybe you've considered a Sleep Number bed, but thought you couldn't afford one. But can you really afford another restless night's sleep?
No, you cannot. And right now, it is the lowest prices of the season. Before you do anything, you've got to go to a Sleep Number store to experience adjustable comfort. For a limited time only, queen mattresses start at only
$599. $599. The Sleep Number bed lets you adjust your mattress firmness or softness on each side whenever you like. It's the perfect bed for couples.
You can actually feel how it contours your neck, shoulders, back, and hips, and for more, proper spinal alignment.
At a Sleep Number store, you can see the science behind your Sleep Number setting with their individual fit pressure mapping technology.
And that's a trademark thing, individual fit.
It is.
So it must be good.
It absolutely is. And nothing compares with finding your just right comfort and pressure relieving support.
So come in now during the lowest prices of the season, where it's the final closeout.
It's the final countdown. Dun, dun, dun.
Final closeout on a Sleep Number Queen C2 mattress with adjustable comfort on both sides, not just one. We've thrown in the second side at no additional cost. It's now only $599.99.
You'll only find Sleep Number any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you.
That's sleepnumber.com/court to find the store near you. Mike and Tommy say, sleep well, good night. Don't let the bed bugs bite. And if they do, we'll take a shoe and beat them till they're black and blue.
I feel like with all this Sleep Number talk and couch talk, it's a very furniture-heavy podcast.
It is. And with chairs, there were chairs in there, too.
There were chairs, floors.
Yeah.
So now there was a problem with this, with Justice Lafferty's statement saying basically that he did not have much oversight into what was going on.
Besides the fact it wasn't the truth?
Well, the problem was emails.
Oh.
There are emails which showed that he had way more input in basically what he was trying to say. And he was actually selecting things.
You know that people think emails are private? They think, like, if you send an email from one person to another, those two people are the only two people that will ever see it. They should know everybody can see an email if one of those two people decides they want everybody to see it.
Yeah, and also, if it's on a government server like that,
People can look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Or the Russians. They're probably looking at it. And the Chinese, they're probably looking at it.
That's right, comrade. So, that was the interview that took place in, I guess, middle of November. Then the Charleston Gazette Mail reported in November that Lafferty was found to have in his home a Cass Gilbert desk.
That's the desk.
And it was named after the architect of the state capitol when the capitol was opened in 1927. So
this thing was an antique, probably a priceless heirloom.
That's right. Heirloom? Is that something you weave hair with?
Yeah, like the cotton gin.
So as I said, it was the Cass Gilbert desk was one of the original decorations of the West Virginia Capitol. Cass Gilbert was a famed architect, and he designed the buildings. He also designed, I think, the Washington, D.C. Capitol, and there's some other buildings he did. He's very, very popular.
Very prolific designer.
That's right. And there's actually been kind of a long-running mystery as to what happened to all the furnishings in these Cass Gilbert furnishings around the Capitol, because some of them had disappeared.
Well, I think we need to go to Lafferty's house.
We should. While you're there, you can also check out a leather blue-green couch, which was purchased by former Justice Joe Albright in 2001, but was at the Supreme Court offices, but somehow made its way to Lafferty's house.
Was that one a $32,000 couch?
This was not a $32,000 couch. This was a free couch that he basically took from his office that used to belong to one of the other justices who retired. He just took it to his house for his home office.
Well, he obviously didn't need it in his office. He had a $32,000 one, so he didn't need to be redundant.
He said it was for his home office, but this was actually the only couch in the house. Because one of the things that Lafferty had said is, I live very modestly in a small house.
Yeah.
So.
And it's furnished entirely by the state of West Virginia.
That's right. He had employees from a private moving company take the couch from his office at the Capitol to his home on West Virginia Day in 2013.
Ah, while everybody was out. He had them come do it on overtime.
It was a private moving company, so.
That's, they probably didn't observe the holiday.
No, probably not.
So then he paid for it? I thought that he didn't even pay for it. I thought the state paid for him to move these things.
The state paid for it.
The state paid for a private moving company to move these things.
He did on West Virginia Day in 2013.
Man.
So since then, basically, this is after the story broke out, Loughery had the desk and the couch returned to the Capitol by having state employees pick up the desk from his home and take them to a warehouse in Kanawha City. So that's where they store their extra furniture and things like that.
So and his name, pick them up from there and take them there so he could say, I don't know anything about it.
That's right. In the statement of charges against him in the judicial, there's different things that came out about probably a week and a half ago. These judicial ethics complaints came out against him. And in that, basically, the charges say that his wife called him at work after the neighbors across the street left their house so no one would see the desk being moved of their house on November 30th, 2017. So neighbors actually took photos of the couch being moved from his house on November 28th, and Loughery contacted Albright's widow and son. These were the people who were the justice's heirs, and said they didn't want the couch, and so therefore he said it was abandoned property. So his old scheme was, not scheme, but his old line of reasoning was, is that, well, Justice Albright bought the couch, he left it there, they didn't want it anymore, so basically it was abandoned property.
My question is, did Justice Albright buy it?
Oh, he bought it.
You know, out of his own money?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
It had squatter's rights at the Supreme Court.
Yeah, because basically after he passed away in 2009, the family said they declined to take the couch when they collected his personal property and belongings.
Well, you said it was green vinyl or something, didn't you? Who'd want it anyway?
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe, I mean,
a 1960 disco couch or something.
Well, Loughery worked for Albright, so maybe he had some personal kind of sentimental type things for it.
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is that actually West Virginia has very specific laws about abandoned property and what you can do with it, and they kind of called him to task on it. And they said that Loughery did not adhere to the state's unclaimed property policy in regard to him taking possession of the Albright couch.
It has to be advertised.
Well, it said if Loughery didn't want the couch in his court office, state law requires that it be deemed surplus property. And if it had been surplus property, he could have legally purchased it. So, I guess I don't know if it had to be advertised.
He did legally purchase it with a five-finger discount.
So, basically, in April, legislative auditors said Loughery might have violated the West Virginia Ethics Act by having all that furniture in his house. So he had the Cass Gilbert desk in his house, and that was the one he had used when he was a law clerk. But when he moved to his new office as a justice, it already had a Cass Gilbert desk, so he said, well, I'll just take that one for the home office.
Oh, yeah, so that was the home office.
Yeah. And so he said there was a policy of justices being able to furnish their home office since they work so much from home.
And this policy he thought up himself.
Well, it's nowhere written or oral was what the thing said. So
it was just something that he thought was a good idea.
Yep. So in January, actually, Loughery testified before the House Finance Committee, and he said that basically the renovations were needed, and with the exception of a few isolated and unjustifiable purchases, the costs were necessary. But he did say there was clearly a lack of oversight by the court with regard to the purchases. So that brings us up to just about today. As I said, there were judicial ethics filed against him where he was removed from the bench a couple weeks ago. And then today, the indictment came out. Dun, dun, dun. Now, there had been speculation running rampant around legal circles about whether or not there were federal indictments, there was target letters and all these things going on with the West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals. As you can imagine, this is pretty much fodder for attorneys around town because we're wondering what in the world is going on up there.
Mm-hmm.
So the indictment came out and basically alleges that Loughery from 2013 through at least March schemed to defraud the state of West Virginia and others, including American University and Pound Civil Justice Institute, by fraudulently claiming mileage for trips on which he used government credit card for gasoline and drove a Supreme Court vehicle, used government vehicles and credit cards for personal use but reported he was on official business, and later lied to his fellow Supreme Court justices about it. So basically, Supreme Court justices have access to vehicles that they can take if they're going on official court business.
Right.
Now, he was asked to speak in Washington, D.C. at American University on one occasion, and also by Pound Civil Justice Institute on another occasion. And they said, if you come speak, we will pay you for your mileage, we'll pay you to in your hotel
rooms,
expenses. All your expenses.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, that's fine. So he checked out the Supreme Court vehicle, drove it, filled it up.
Claimed the mileage.
Filled it up with
a West Virginia credit card.
With a West Virginia credit card, and then they paid him for the mileage.
Yeah.
And he didn't reimburse the state for it.
You know what this comes down to? Not only is he a morally bankrupt individual, But he's also a cheap bastard.
I mean, this, we're not talking about a lot of money here.
No.
I mean, this is like, you know, a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, it's a couple hundred dollars. And that's worth it to you to compromise your ethics as the head judge of the state?
And here's an ironic thing. He used the government vehicles and the government gas when he was going to different book signings for his book, which talked about corrupt practices of politicians in West Virginia.
And so, I can guarantee you, this guy does not see himself as corrupt. He sees that he was entitled to those things because of his position. He was allowed to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's just crazy. I mean, I can kind of see where if a Supreme Court justice is going to talk to people at book signings and things like that, that could somewhat be closer to being Supreme Court business because, you know, I think it's kind of good for a justice to get out there and talk about the law to different people and things like that. But he is actually benefiting from that because he's publicizing his book. And that's kind of the difference.
Yeah.
If he was just going to speak somewhere and say, hey, I'm here to talk about justice in West Virginia and whatnot, I don't have a problem with him using the government funds to do it.
Correct. If he's promoting the state agenda, then there's nothing wrong with that. But if he's going out and selling books, then why would the state need to reimburse him for that?
And they investigated this pretty seriously. They looked at his calendar and all these things and saw where he took trips. He took trips to like his parents' house in Tucker County and used the Supreme Court car, and he didn't have any kind of business going on there. I mean, they went through with a fine-tooth comb all of this stuff. So the indictment also goes on that he had one of the Supreme Court's historic Cass Gilbert desks, it says, named after the architect who designed the court's chamber, transported to his home office under false pretenses on a West Virginia day and converted it to personal use. This revolves around West Virginia Day quite a bit.
Yeah.
They tried to conceal his fraud by lying to federal investigators, including during a recorded interview with an FBI special agent. He tried to point the finger at others in a bid to shift attention away from himself. It says, in last October, after reporters asked him about the money that had been spent to renovate and refurbish the Office of the Supreme Court, tried to corruptly influence testimonial evidence of a Supreme Court employee in an imminent federal grand jury investigation into excessive and fraudulent expenditures by the Supreme Court. So, I mean, they stacked the charges on him. That American University fraud dated back to 2013, because that was basically when he first came into office, and his book was still a bit more fresh then. Seems like maybe the book might need to have another chapter added to it now. I'm just kind of guessing.
Yeah, an autobiographical one. When I went corrupt.
And he also, the other one, he went to American Washington College of Law. He was speaking about honesty and integrity in government.
So. Something he knew very little about.
Yeah. The actual indictment itself doesn't really talk too much about the renovations.
It's like when you have the hacker come teach you about how to keep somebody from hacking you.
That's right. So it seems to me that basically the whole problem with this and the reason that this really spun out of control is number one, he shouldn't have been doing what he was doing. But number two, I think if he had just come clean pretty quickly with the renovations and said, yeah, I authorized it. We really don't have a budget. I wanted to have nice stuff in here. People would have been really, really upset about it. But that probably would have kind of ended the whole thing right there. But because he kind of deflected and tried to cover things up and this, mm-hmm. that, and the other, I think it really kind of made things spiral out of control.
And why did he deflect and try to cover that up?
Probably because he felt like he was entitled to it.
No, because he knew he was wrong.
That's probably true, too.
He knew he was wrong. He knew he shouldn't have been doing that. That wasn't like, I thought it was okay. I thought they were frowned upon.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a real rule. Yes, you did. You knew it was, and that's why you tried to conceal it.
The one interesting thing in there is also is that it says he did lie to other justices because this was over the whole car policy, mm-hmm. because they wanted to come up with a policy about, hey, you can only use this for actual business, because he was basically using it himself all the time. He had his own keys to the car, too, mm-hmm. so he wasn't really checking it out like you're supposed to do.
Right. It was his car.
Yeah. So they tried to come up with some sort of policy for it, but he kind of basically lied to him about that, allegedly.
Now, I can tell you this, too, that he would be subject to federal tax fraud, because if you have a company vehicle and you use it for your own personal use, it's not just one that you drive to work and use this car if you've got business, but you have for your own personal use, you have to claim that at the end of the year. There's a formula that's used in your mileage and things like that, mm-hmm. personal mileage and company mileage, that you have to use, and that goes against you as earned income. So if he hadn't been doing that and that car was exclusively his, then that's a federal tax violation.
Yeah, I think that would sound like a taxable event.
Yes, that's how you got by. That's what it is. It's a taxable event. So,
if you listen to the last episode, you'll get that joke. So what looms for Justice Loffrey besides
prison, I hope.
Well, but I'm saying like in the near future. Well, I think it's probably going to be impeachment, because that's how you remove a judge. And that's where we talked about it before. Impeachment was with judges and federal judges, things like that. And so under West Virginia Code 663, any officer of the state or any judge may be impeached and removed from office for maladministration, corruption, incompetency, gross immorality, neglect of duty, or any high crime or misdemeanor in the manner prescribed in Section 9, Article 4 of the Constitution of the state. So the Constitution basically says that in Article 4, Section 9, Article 4, that the House of Delegates shall have the sole power to impeach. The Senate shall have the sole power to try impeachments, and no person shall be convicted without concurrence of 2/3 of the members elected to. So basically, it's kind of the similar procedure as the federal impeachment process, where the House votes to impeach, and then the Senate basically tries.
Right.
So it's kind of a sad West Virginia day.
Now, you want me to tell you how this story is going to end, probably, most likely?
All right. How's it going to most likely end?
He's going to resign.
He's going to have to.
And nothing will happen.
You don't think he's going to go to jail?
Nope. He's not going to go to jail. Once he resigns, then the bodies that are governing him are no longer going to have any authority over him. So all those charges will go away. Now, there's a possibility they could fine him, except they still have all the stuff that he bought with their money. So his argument could be, hey, look, you've got all the stuff. If you don't like it, sell it. So, I mean, it's not like... Yeah, he did have some of his house, but he took that to the state warehouse. So I really believe he's going to walk, and what he'll have to do, then he'll go back to be a lawyer. And they'll say, oh, well, we'll disbar him. You know what? You can't do it. You can't move to disbar him as a lawyer because of stuff he did as a judge.
Oh, I don't know.
It doesn't work that way. If you're a lawyer and then you become a judge and they find out things you did while you were still a lawyer, then you can get disbarred. But if you're a judge, I don't think you answer for those things.
Well, here's the problem. There's no way he is not going to take some sort of felony for this.
Like I say, other than the federal tax evasion, if he had his own company car, basically, and didn't claim the tax residuals on that, that's tax fraud. But I don't think the other ones will stick.
You don't think so?
No.
I don't know. If he lied to federal investigators, that's pretty cut and dry.
I think once he resigns, the whole problem goes away.
So right now, I mean, he's facing up to 395 years in prison and fines up to $5.5 million for this.
I'm saying that he'll resign and get nothing.
All right. We'll see.
Now, here's what I base this on.
Okay.
In March of this year, the Nebraska Supreme Court's Council for Discipline concluded that Supreme Court Justice Kelch, that he lacked jurisdiction to investigate a grievance filed by State Senator Ernie Chambers against former Justice Kelch, who resigned earlier this year following an ethics complaint. It said that Kelch had said that Chambers was seeking Kelch's disbarment for his misconduct while on the bench. Details of the alleged misconduct are shrouded in secrecy because a judicial ethics complaint, which by law remains confidential until the commission finds probable cause to warrant discipline, became moot when Kelch stopped being a judge February 15th. So they said basically once he stopped being a judge, they could no longer investigate him.
That's true.
A Supreme Court judge. So they couldn't investigate him anymore. So they said that he just took it and stepped aside, and they can't even say what the charges are, although it is what has come out is it was along with the Me Too movement, and it was a form of sexual harassment of some type that took place.
But I think that was kind of, he resigned before it really came into the forefront. I think this is too far out in the open. I don't think that's just going to be kind of swept under the rug.
Well, I think there's people that know about this, but they're not allowed to say anything.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, I'm thinking this is...
He stepped down, and now they can't do anything.
Oh, see, I just think they're going to do something to him. I really do. I'm just telling you my personal opinion on it. I think...
Well, he deserves it. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I'm just saying that... Them that has gets.
Well, here's
that's
the,
what I'm
here's
saying.
Here's the other thing, too. We both know from our beliefs that basically we think the U.S. District Attorney here is planning on making some sort of political run.
Right.
And he's probably not going to make that political run based off of, let some guy go.
Yeah, but it depends on if his hands are tied or not. What do the state judiciary codes say as far as investigating a judge and stuff?
Well, this is outside that now.
Once he's no longer a judge.
This is a federal indictment. This is outside that.
Well, I hope so. I hope they do, but I think it walked. Here was another one from 2014. Did you ever hear of Porngate? Two Supreme Court justices were swept up in that from Pennsylvania.
I have not heard of Porngate. Is it a website?
No, it was a controversy where two Supreme Court justices were, again, emails.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't realize that when they sent emails around that other people saw them and they could be brought back up. And, you know, even if you delete or clear your browser history, if you know what you're doing, you can still go find these things and all this other kind of stuff. So they passed around sexually explicit emails with colleagues. They exchanged them with both defense attorneys and prosecuting attorneys and all this. And they're the judges that these people are going to appear before.
Maybe they didn't know if it was porn and they were just trying to figure it out because they'd know it if they see it.
Well, I don't know. They said that some of them would show, some of these emails showed sex acts. And in some photos, women were portrayed as sexually subservient secretaries accompanied with phrases like devotion. Making your boss happy is your only job, and things like that.
Good Lord.
So, I mean, these are not things that a judge especially should think, oh, there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's harmless fun. But you're sending it around, and you don't know who's seeing it, and you know, you're fraternizing with others. So the first one to go was a Justice McCaffrey, and he resigned. So he didn't face any kind of justice or anything. He just resigned and he's getting his full pension, $100,000+ a year that he's getting his full pension. And then it took a little bit longer because this guy was in deeper, but finally Supreme Court Justice Michael Eakin, he also resigned, but he was fined $50,000, but he still gets his $153,000 a year annual pension for it as well and doesn't have to answer for any of this. And it said the common thread of the emails was their imagery of sexism, racism, and bigotry.
That's probably enough money where they can have a pretty fast internet access and the ability to cruise the internet for porn pretty quickly.
Well, but it wasn't really porn, I mean, per se. It wasn't like they were just going to websites to entertain themselves. It was the distribution of these things that were coming out of the offices. And they were saying there was like over 500 sexually explicit emails or racist type emails that they were sending around, emails or, you know, cartoons, things like that, that were involved in it. And, you know, these are guys that should have known better. And they're basically fraternizing with them. What kind of position would that put you in if you're going to give an unfavorable ruling against a defense counselor and you've sent him some of these sexually explicit emails?
Yeah.
What, doesn't that compromise you? You know,
exactly.
That he could come out and say these things about you, that he received these pornographic things from you and stuff.
Or if you're like, you're basically conducting a trial and there's some woman in a sexy French maid outfit. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So I got that picture last week. I know what you're thinking, Judge. But I'm just saying these guys are above the law. The problem is the laws are made by these people. They make the laws. They're the ones responsible for enforcing them, and they, of course, make them just like our government officials.
Well, technically, the judges don't make the law. The judges interpret the law.
Yeah, they interpret it in their favor.
Right, but it's incumbent upon the legislatures to make law that actually reins in judges like this. And that's why I think we need to have reform in West Virginia with regard to judicial spending. Now, that's one thing.
Well, now, they did do that.
That's one thing I see coming out of this is a very strong reform on
They have. They've put some, I don't know if it's a person, a position, or brought it under somebody else, but they now have an auditory review of where the money is going. It's no longer carte blanche. The justices decide for themselves. So that has changed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think when you're spending $6,000 on window cornices, something needs to happen.
I mean, unless you've got really nice windows. Maybe they deserve $6,000 cornices.
I'm sure they're very nice.
Cornishes.
Cornish hens.
I don't even know what those are. I guess they're a decoration of some type.
Well, I just had to Google it. A window cornice is basically a decorative wood piece that is above a window. Kind of like a...
And so he put a $6,000 piece of wood over his window?
That's right.
Man, I could just think about the guy that sold him that. I tell you what you need there, Justice, to really fix this place up. I got you a piece of wood. Only $6,000 make that window just look sublime.
Let's get you a monorail that takes you from your chambers to the bench.
And into your home office.
Everybody needs a monorail.
We'll put it in on West Virginia Day. Nobody will be none the wiser.
That was the thing I didn't even realize when I was researching this, that all this took place on West Virginia Day.
Because nobody's in the Capitol. They're closed on West Virginia Day.
Well, I was working today, and I was trying to get some work done. Good luck getting in touch with anybody at any government office today.
No, they're all out. The state takes it as a holiday.
Yeah, I should have taken it as a holiday. Instead, I was busy reading up about Justice Loffery. So, well,
you know, everybody's got to be somewhere.
Well, that's going to bring us to...
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is usually the part of the show where we ask about different legal terms, but I didn't come up with any legal terms today because I was just totally flabbergasted by this whole story and the fact that one of our Supreme Court justices was arrested today and charged with 22 federal indictments.
I'm not.
You're not?
I'm not. Those are the guys that fall prey to it more than anybody else. The thing that surprised me is the ones that haven't gotten caught yet. They're all guilty. It's just some are guiltier than others.
The one interesting thing, and this is going to be a story to follow, is that they asked the prosecuting attorney if there were going to be any other charges coming out of this against anybody of the other justices. He said no comment. So now the fact is that there were a lot of different spending things that went on during this renovation.
What if all of them get swept up in it?
I don't know.
And they vacate the bench.
There could be some job openings.
Yeah.
Here comes the judge.
You could run for one of those things.
Yeah, anybody can run for, well, not anybody, but any lawyer, assuming you meet the age qualifications and things like that.
Do you have to be a lawyer? I wonder if you do.
You do have to be a lawyer to be a justice.
But some things you don't have to.
Well, a magistrate, you don't have to be a lawyer. But no, to be a justice, you have to.
You just have to be able to wake up in the morning to be a magistrate.
You have to be able to pick out proper office furnishings to be a justice.
Yeah.
So, but if you don't follow Justice Loffery's couch on Twitter, you really should. It's kind of funny.
Follow the couch.
There's a lot of couch talk in West Virginia. Sometimes Mountaineers burn it after they win victories. You know,
yeah, I never understood that. The MWVU hillbillies, they burn up couches after they win a game. What does that mean? Why do you burn your couch?
Well, I think we have a good understanding about what a Cass Gilbert desk is now.
Yes. And who wants them?
And who wants them? Everyone wants them, I guess, evidently. And you got to collect them all. They're like Pokemon.
Yeah.
And we know what window cornices are now.
Yeah, they're fancy pieces of wood over the window that are cost too much.
We don't know what a blue sex couch is, a 32,000 blue sectional. What do you call it?
A sexual couch.
That's
what it sounded like you said.
We don't know what a blue sexual couch is, but we know what a sectional couch is. We got that going for us. I'm just trying to rehash the episode here. What else do we know? We know that to have the state pay for your trip somewhere and then try to charge somebody else for it and get paid twice is not really good.
Good practice.
Especially when you're putting out your book about corruption. So,
and we know if you want to move furniture in and out of the Capitol, West Virginia Day is the best day to do it.
That's right. West Virginia Day may need to be renamed as Furniture Moving Day.
Moving Day. I have that at the Masters.
They do have that at the Masters. Yeah. The Supreme Court.
Saturday is moving day, I believe.
West Virginia's day is moving day. Is known around the Capitol as moving day.
Yeah. So the Masters is playing this week.
But you really just can't write this, that a justice who is a politician as well wrote a book, "Don't Buy Another Vote, I Won't Pay for a Landslide," is caught up in political corruption like this. It's just amazing. Nothing else to say, is there?
Well, you said what county he was from, so he's just a no-good mother from Tucker.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...